This is not really George St. Pierre, but you are listening to Top Turtle MMA Podcast, Episode 1. Matt Hughes, I am still not impressed with your performance. Welcome to Top Turtle Podcast, Episode 1. I am your host, David Tremonti, and I am joined by MMAManifesto.com's co-editor, Daniel Gumby Vreeland. How are you today, Dan?
I'm excellent, and it's great that we finally got a chance to do a podcast, because MMA Manifesto has been trying to put together a podcast for years now, and they always fell through for one reason or another, and it's about time that we got this show on the road.
Well, I think this came about basically just to give the listeners a little bit of background. You and I trained together at New England Submission
Fighting. That is correct.
And every Monday, we basically host our own podcast that no one listens to at Open Mat between roles.
Occasionally one or two newbies listen.
Yeah, sometimes people will join in and give like an opinion. And then I said to you one day, how come MMA Manifesto doesn't have a podcast? Let's do one. And we somehow conned enough people into giving us permission to do it.
Yes, and now we have this thing. And speaking of training, quick plug for our first sponsor.
Oh, yeah.
We've all been there training at an open mat, much like the one where we chat at, and the big, fat, sweaty guy walks in the front door. You're instantly thinking of ways not to roll with him. He winds up rolling with you, probably covers up your nose at some point in time. You can't breathe because you've got a terrible mouthpiece in that blocks your breathing, and his sweaty shirt is all over your nose, which is why you should get yourself a Sisu mouthguard. Sisu mouthguard, that's SISU guard.com. They are some of the most breathable mouthguards. I've got myself one. Dave's got himself one.
Breathable, people.
Very breathable. You don't have to worry about fat, sweaty guys anymore.
So we have a fun show for you guys today. We're going to break down a couple of key news items, and then we're going to talk about the upcoming card this Saturday, January 16th?
17th. It's on Sunday, January 17th, in Boston, which I am lucky enough to be there so that I get to see all of these fights live, not just talk about them.
It's Ultimate Fight Night 81?
81.
And it's going up after the Sunday football games on Fox Sports. They did UFC Fight Night Boston last year, I think the same weekend as the AFC games, right?
That's correct. They've seemed to be moving in later and later into the day, and they actually just pushed the fights back a half an hour, an hour to the prelims now start at 7 o'clock to make sure that they're not running into the football.
But they will get that cross promotion on Fox, right?
That's correct.
Because it's an NFC day on Sunday.
That's correct. Yeah, so they'll get Fox promotion throughout that whole thing anyway.
All right. So before we get to that, we'll talk about the big news of the week, and that is they announced a co-main event for UFC 197 the first weekend in March, and it is going to be Conor McGregor versus Rafael Dos Anjos for the 155-pound title, and co-headlined with Holly Holm versus Miesha Tate for the women's bantamweight championship. What was your reaction, Gumby, when you heard about this?
So my first reaction is the amount of people who get absolutely screwed by this whole deal. So obviously, Ronda Rousey needs some more time. That's why they made the Miesha Tate fight.
She's hosting Saturday Night Live next weekend.
Yeah, so she's definitely got no time to work on her footwork.
Right.
So she's obviously out of the picture. I don't think she's getting screwed. Miesha Tate, you could argue, has probably gotten screwed in the past and is finally getting what she actually deserves.
Yeah. Well, she was, so backtrack a bit, she was promised that title shot after beating Jessica I think it was, last July. And then they took it away from her. They gave the shot to Holly Holm for reasons, whatever they were. And now she gets her chance at the title, which is kind of cool because it would set up the trilogy fight against Ronda if she wins.
Yeah, I just don't see how she can win that fight, though. I mean, she got...
Versus Holly or versus Ronda?
Versus Holly. I mean, Rousey, too, but she got hit in the head a lot by Jessica I. Jessica I hit her a couple of times. She was like even a little bit woozy in that first round. When she gets hit by Holly Holm, and she is going to get hit by Holly Holm, it is not going to be that easy to recover like it was against Jessica I. And Jessica I hits hard. I'm not taking anything away from Jessica I, but she's not Holly Holm.
Okay, so devil's advocate on that, and I agree with you completely, and I would put my money on Holly Holm. One thing that kind of interests me about the matchup is when we saw Holly defend Ronda's takedowns, which granted were more out of the clinch, judo hip throws, what have you, I am interested to see a wrestler like Miesha, Because Misha has takedowns, right?
She does. She's got good wrestling. Like, so, she's a very good wrestler.
Right? Yeah. So I am interested to see Misha try to take Holly down and maybe just ground and pound. What's your take on that?
I think it's always a possibility. You can't count that out. But if Jackson worked that hard to keep her from getting taken down by judo throws, I just can't imagine she doesn't have like a kick-ass sprawl too.
Fair.
Where she's just going to pound Misha near in the head on her way in.
Who's the Jackson Winklejohn, the famous wrestling coach? It's Izzy Martinez, right? Am I thinking of that right?
I think you might be, but the two that stick in my head are Jackson and Winklejohn, so I don't ever remember the other ones from that gym.
But yeah, fair enough. That gym doesn't have a history of not defending takedowns.
Exactly, right? Yeah. Name anybody in that gym who can't defend a takedown. I mean, John Jones stopped an Olympic... Whatever he was.
Out wrestled in an MMA fight, Olympic wrestler.
Olympic wrestler.
Versus,
yeah, exactly.
Daniel Cormier last January. So, okay, so that's kind of the quick take on Holm versus Tate. And then what's your early feelings on Connor versus RDA, which, side note, Vegas has RDA right now slightly favored.
I think I agree with Vegas odds because I think in that fight I saw with Chad Mendes, he showed that he's definitely got a few holes as far as wrestling goes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the reason that it didn't work out for Mendes was his gas tank. Like, yes. When he got off of him in the second round, Connor had that look of blood in his eyes. He was going to stalk down Chad Mendes, and he did. He walked right out of
He wanted Mendes, out of that fight as quick as possible.
Chad Mendes looked like he was going to poop his pants when Connor started walking at him. And I think it was not because he's afraid of Connor, because he wasn't afraid of Connor. He took that fight
on 2 weeks' notice.
Lots of props to him for taking that fight on 2 weeks' notice. But when Connor got up, had that hate in his eyes, Chad knew how tired he was. Chad was tired. He knew he was coming with better striking, and he knew he didn't have the energy to take him down again. I think Dos Anjos has that same takedown ability as Mendes does, only he's got way better cardio.
Sure.
And he's got a full camp to prepare for this versus Chad Mendes having 2 weeks.
So let me ask you a question. How do you, because I was thinking about it in my head, thinking of what RDA did to Pettis, because Pettis wanted to stand at distance and, you know, maybe trade kicks, trade punches, find his range. Dos Anjos was having none of that. So is there sort of a link there to how Connor stacks up against RDA? Is RDA just going to pressure Connor and come in? Like,
I think Cordero out of Kings MMA is one of the best game planners out there. I mean, you saw that when Verdum beat Velazquez, which we've got coming up again. You saw that when Dos Anjos came into that Pettis fight. You know, that's not how he had fought any of his fights before.
Right.
You know, to take somebody down and try to ground and pound them for 5 rounds like he did to the champ, you don't want to strike with Pettis. You all know you don't want to strike with Pettis.
So he didn't. Is it a similar game plan against Connor then?
I would say the same. Yeah, same thing. Like, you know, Connor's got amazing kickboxing. He's got great boxing. His footwork's out of this world. Same with Pettis. Pettis has got amazing footwork. He's got great kicks. His hands are lethal. And you never know quite what you're going to get out of him, too. He's got some spinning shit. You know, Connor throws some spinning shit. They all can surprise you just a little bit here and there. But Dos Anjos just decided to take that out of the equation. And if he can do that again against Connor, he can get close enough to take him down. I don't see why you wouldn't do that.
Yeah, I was looking at it this morning, actually. I mean, he took down Nate Diaz in their 3-round fight, I think 2 or 3 times. He took down Benson Henderson in the win that propelled him to the title fight. He took down Pettis, I want to say.
I think it's double digits, to be honest.
Yeah, it might have been just about 10 in a 5-round title fight. So there's no reason not to think that he's gonna take down Connor at will, I mean, you could almost say.
Yeah, I think he might struggle at the first couple when Connor is good. And Connor's got an amazing gas tank, too. Don't take that away from Connor either. But that being said, Connor's wrestling defense deteriorated as he fought Mendes. Like, he fought the first takedown off fairly well.
Right.
And then he didn't. And he was on the ground for a round. Then he was on the ground for most of the second round. He kicked him off. We never had to see a third one, luckily for Connor. And luckily for us. I mean, that was a fun finish to watch. I don't think he's going to keep getting back up against Dos Anjos. Dos Anjos is a way heavier pressure. He's a bigger guy, too. You forget that 10 pounds might make a huge difference.
Yeah, and I'm curious, do you know what RDA cuts down from? I mean, he walks around. He's a He seems like he's got a big frame on him for 155.
Yeah, I don't know what he cuts down from, but he is definitely a big guy. I mean, he looked, you put him next to Benson Henderson, who is a giant 155er.
Who fights well at 170.
Yeah, his legs are enormous.
Yeah.
And Dos Anjos looked just as big as him, or if smaller, only a little bit smaller.
Yeah. Now, I will also say it's just interesting to me because obviously Khabib Nurmagomedov, who's on the shelf right now, always battling the injury bug, just made RDA, he ragdolled him in their three-round fight. So I just feel like whoever wins this, whenever Khabib can get ready, that's his title at 155.
Well, we keep saying that, too, and that was kind of my point when we started earlier about, like, how many people got screwed. People are saying that he got screwed, right? Because this is his
that
title
Khabib
fight.
Khabib got screwed?
Yeah, this is his title fight when he wants it, right?
For sure.
You could have said that if Conor fights Frankie being the one who gets screwed clearly the most.
Right.
Conor gets Frankie. Maybe Khabib comes back on time, you know, if his knees ever heal.
Right. Well, it was a rib injury, I think, recently. Oh, yeah, it went to need a rib. Yeah, yeah. He can't stay injured is the bottom. Or can't stay healthy. Yeah.
And it's been like 2 years at this point. So you could say he got screwed. He gets that RDA fight if he's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I really thought that after the performance that he turned in, we were going to see
Tony Ferguson. Yep.
Yeah, Tony Ferguson's Darius choke. Not enough people are talking about that, and it's because he's so quiet. If he gave us the old Stipe Miocic yelling at Dana White from the cage...
Right. He might have a title shot.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, he definitely wouldn't have a title shot because Conor wanted this shot.
And so let me put on a conspiracy theory hat just for a second. I was actually kind of surprised because obviously the UFC has a history of... They'll tease someone going up in weight classes. Like, you know, BJ Penn, obviously. I think he was the lightweight champ. He fought GSP... in January of 2009 for the welterweight title, but it's not something they do often. And the fact that they just gave Conor, I don't know.
They gave him the keys to the organization. That's what they did. Because let's brainstorm this for a second. Say Conor wins, whether or not you think he's going to, for sake of the argument, Conor wins. So Conor wins. He now has two belts.
And ties up two divisions.
Two divisions.
Yeah.
He's got to be walking on, like, pillows for the next few weeks to make sure he doesn't get hurt, because he's going to have to defend these titles in order for the public to be happy with him and not turn him into a villain instantly.
Right.
He's got to defend them at least one once and the other one twice.
Right.
He's got to have three title defenses in a single year. Maybe two and two.
The way I would look at it, perfect world, the way this lines up, if he won, hypothetically speaking, if he won the lightweight title in early March and then defended the featherweight title at UFC 200 in July, he's only going to fight, I think, three times this year. Then you would get maybe one more lightweight title fight at the end of the year. And now that means the featherweight title was only defended one time in 2016.
And lucky for that division right now, there is not a ton of contenders chomping at the bit.
It's Frankie and then there's Max Holloway.
It's Frankie and the rest right now for me. Because, you know, Max Holloway still got to beat that one guy that lets us know, okay, he can fight for a title. Because Jeremy Stephens is a violent dude. But Jeremy Stephens does not tell me that Max Holloway is ready for the top.
Agreed.
You know, Max Holloway, people forget, got out-wrestled by Conor McGregor for three rounds with a torn ACL.
Right.
So until he shows me something like he can beat Aldo or he can beat Chad Mendes, if he can beat somebody like that, he can beat Uriah Faber coming up to 145, okay, I'm ready for Max Holloway. But until then, it was either Frankie Edgar or an Aldo rematch. Those were the only two viable candidates for a title shot there, at least for the time being. I mean, there are guys at 45 who have time to come up.
I know the UFC's very high on Yair Rodriguez.
Yep, who's got a win over Charles Rosa.
So, yeah, I mean, the featherweight division is really Frankie, and I guess maybe someone can make an argument for Max Holloway, but really it's just Frankie.
Yeah.
So are they really tying that division up? Maybe not. You know, maybe that division could kind of sort itself out if he only defends it once this year.
But it definitely, what it does tie up is the lightweights. There are so many lightweights who are one... two, three fights away. So, fighting this weekend, Pettis and Alvarez, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Pettis and Alvarez, the winner of that, you would have to think, is pretty close to a title shot. I thought Ferguson is already in line for one, as far as I was concerned, the way that he dismantled Edson Barboza. You talk about Khabib coming back from injury. There's three people who are already ready to go
right
for a title shot. And there are others in that division, too. You forget Gil Melendez is coming back from his steroid suspension later in the year.
Mm-hmm.
Gil Melendez probably only a win or two away.
I mean, I'm never opposed if he re-signs. I know he's been fighting recently at 170, but Benson Henderson's always around at 155,
yeah,
right?
Benson Henderson...
A phone call away for a 155 title fight, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure if Conor went down hurt, he'd fight Dos Anjos on no day's notice.
So, okay, so actually two things, and then we'll wrap up on this. One, I want to go back to my conspiracy theory. Is it almost like Conor said, I want that 155-pound title in the UFC? Normally, with a superstar of his magnitude, they don't want to see him lose, but did they just say, all right, sure, go try to face RDA, and if he loses... Is it almost good for the UFC when it comes to negotiation tactics? Do they want Conor to get this big?
I think what it does really well for the UFC is not that it knocks Conor down. Because I think no matter what, Conor's going to run his mouth. Conor could lose to Dos Anjos.
And still be a huge star.
And still be a huge star, especially if it goes like I think it's going to go with the wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
But if that happens, what it does do for the UFC that the UFC has got to love is it makes RDA an instant star.
Mm.
People are going to start paying for RDA, and not that they shouldn't already be. The guy knocked out Benson Henderson. He easily decisioned Anthony Pettis.
And he just obliterated Cowboy Cerrone, who's like he's a fan favorite and also a UFC brass favorite.
Yeah, and imagine now in this like crazy world that Dos Anjos has got a chance in about 3 months' time or 4 months' time, however long it was, to beat Conor McGregor and Cowboy Cerrone, two of like these huge fan favorites. If it makes him a villain but still sells pay-per-views, that's brilliant for
sure. And then they could go down to Brazil with him defending his title later in the year.
And sell the hell out of it.
Right. So, okay, so that was kind of my one conspiracy theory. And then we'll just wrap up on this, which is, how does this shape up for UFC 200? Because the rumors, you know, as we turn the corner into the new year, everyone kind of thought that the co-headline of UFC 200 would be some combination, maybe, of the Ronda Holly rematch, and now Holly's fighting in March, and then Conor, you know, potentially facing the thought at the time was either Frankie for the featherweight title, or maybe that would have been the lightweight title fight. But now you have these two stars, Holly and Conor, both who are rumored to be UFC 200 co-headliners, fighting in March. I mean, if Holly tears an ACL defending a takedown against Miesha Tate, where does this land us for UFC 200? Who do you see right now as the most logical UFC 200 headliner?
So I see the biggest concern with what you just described, not being Holly Holm trying to defend a takedown, but Conor McGregor breaking his hand on Dos Anjos' head.
Okay.
I think that's the biggest concern for them right now, is they should be worried about what happens if he punches him so hard in the head, his hand breaks.
And he can't fight, turn around in July.
And that happens all the time, too.
Sure. And they are lined up, but they are lined up early March. UFC is 197, and then UFC 200 is early July, so that does give 4 months. So as long as they go injury-free, both would be, and I'm talking about Holly Holm potentially defending against Ronda in the rematch, and then Conor versus whoever it's going to sell. They'd both be lined up for UFC 200.
I think it makes a lot of sense. The only scary part about that is if Conor loses and they try to stick a featherweight defense on there, your two headliners are a little on the weak side, right? Because you've got girls' fights that typically sell a little bit worse,
mm-hmm.
arguably. And you've got a featherweight champion coming up a loss.
Right.
So, like, does that sell well because they're stars? Probably still. Does it sell well because the whole card will probably be insanely stacked? Yeah, it sells well. But the headliner takes a little bit of a digger if he loses to RDA. So the other one I would consider in there, too, is we still don't have a date.
Jones Cormier.
For John Jones.
Right.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be Cormier. He could fight Cormier, you know, in a month as like a fill-in headliner. He could fight him in 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And he would still have time to turn around. Something with John Jones, because John Jones sells too.
Sure.
People have forgotten how much John Jones sells because he's been away.
It's a topic for another podcast, but to me, John Jones is the pound-for-pound best fighter in the UFC, and I think he's one of, we're talking top three, best of all time.
Definitely a conversation that we would need more time
for.
But
more time.
He's definitely one of the tops for me ever.
Well, and then I'll listen. Sometimes I find myself in dark corners of the internet. I'm scared to admit it, but I was trolling a certain mixed martial arts message board. I'm not proud of it. And someone brought up, you know, the idea, obviously, there's rumors of GSP returning. And one thing that would make a lot of sense would be GSP versus Lawler for the welterweight title. But in this particular dark corner of the internet, someone had a just crazy theory. And I found myself actually getting swept away with it, which was Fariz Zahabi, I apparently has gone on record saying GSP could make 155.
Oh my God. I
know. I don't even like bringing this up. But just setting up a super fight between Connor and GSP at 155. I know this is dumb.
It sounds great, right? Because that fight would do 2 million.
Sure.
Right? It would easily do 2 million. Me and you could fight on the prelims and it would sell 2 million. But my problem with that is, have you seen a picture of GSP recently?
He's big.
He's on the John Jones plan for when he was not fighting. Because if you've seen a picture of John Jones recently, he can still make 205 looking like he does, I don't want any part of that.
Right.
I'm scared. And I think GSP has been a little bit on that plan. I wouldn't be surprised to find out it was hard for him to make 170.
Right.
And he's considering 185, which, again, this is again, just complete speculation. GSP Anderson Silva would be an amazing, even if it was a third fight, you could make that a third fight, or you could put the two title fights behind it.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, so that's how we sort of shape up is you have a potential Connor fight, whatever that is, a lightweight title fight, a featherweight title fight, then you have potentially the Ronda Holly rematch. Although, Ronda is now a movie star who occasionally does MMA.
And hosts Saturday Night Live.
Right. So who knows if that's really in the mix for July. Maybe that's later in the year. And then you have Jon Jones, potentially Daniel Cormier, potentially someone else. And then you have GSP coming back, maybe against Robbie Lawler or some sort of super fight, Silva. So that's, as of today, early January, those are kind of like your top 200 potential.
Yeah, I'd love to watch all of that.
Yeah, yeah. UFC 200 shaping up to be massive. They have a lot of tricks up their sleeve, a lot of interesting lineups they could come up with. Shifting off the news, we have a pretty fun episode, Gumby, for our first one. We're going to play your interview with Charles Rosa.
Yep, and he gives us a little bit of inside information about a possible opponent switch, which we got to be one of the first news sources to confirm that opponent switch.
Nice. And then we're also going to play, you caught up with Invicta FC president Shannon Knapp. We're going to play your interview with her.
And she gives us a little background on Cyborg's thought process coming into this fight, where she might go from here, and the possibility of not one, but two tournaments in this calendar year for Invicta.
And also a good moment, I will tell people, for the dozens and dozens who are listening, we do have an email address, and we appreciate fan feedback. We are topturtlemma@gmail.com. Please write in, tell us what you hated about the show, what you might have liked about the show, what you want to see more of. Gumby is an excellent source for gambling. One thing we did discuss was doing a gambling segment, or potentially you do for MMA Manifesto, your prelim fighters to watch.
Yeah, and I always give you a prelim fighter or two that you should keep an eye on, so make sure you head over to the webpage, MMA-Manifesto.com, to check out and see who that is for the Boston card. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Gumby Vreeland. That's at Gumby, Vreeland.
All right, getting away from plugging everything, let's get into what brought us to the dance here, and that is UFC Fight Night Boston, Ultimate Fight Night 81, coming up this Sunday night, and it's a pretty sick main card. It's only four fights, but it's headlined by one that you and I disagree on, and that is Dominic Cruz returning to reclaim his title against TJ Dillashaw.
And it's been a really, really long layoff. I think we all remember him being that dominant champion like 4 or 5 years ago. I guess it's 4 years ago now, I believe. And now he's finally getting the shot back at the title. One little stop on the way, taking Takeya Mitsugaki out really hard and violently. And I'm actually the one who's going to back Dominic Cruz here. Even though he's been away for 4 years, and I say it kind of disdainfully because I've missed him, I think that his footwork being like the anti-TJ Dillashaw, they both have that like crazy, jerky footwork. I don't think TJ's ever fought anybody like that, and I think that that's going to give him some trouble.
Yeah, I I'm backing TJ Dillashaw on this. We'll put a dollar bet homage to Trading Places. We'll just do a dollar bet on this, but I'm backing TJ Dillashaw. It's just hard for me to get behind Cruz, considering he's been in the octagon 14 seconds in 4 years.
And I'm pretty sure it's 4 years, and we can look that up. But
you're right. It's 2011. It was October of 2011.
Over 4 years at this point.
He beat Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson and then came back for 14 seconds in September of 2014. And that's the last we saw of him.
But I have a tough time thinking that that's like a huge layoff for him, because you know he's in the gym training and you know that he's been full health at some point in time, or at least somebody else's definition of full health. He's just not the type of person who's willing to risk what his legacy is on coming back at 85% strength or 90% strength. So I think he's had all that time training. He's over in Alliance. He's got really skilled training partners. That head movement doesn't go away with time. You know, his head isn't going to suddenly be on the line the whole time with his chin up in the air. That head is notoriously hard to hit with that jerky movement. And I don't think TJ Dillashaw has anybody who can emulate that. I mean, maybe Bang Ludwig has got something cooking over there in wherever they are, Colorado now. Yeah, so maybe he's got something cooking over there, but I can't imagine they've got somebody who emulates that style well.
Well, okay, so I'll back off on Dillashaw just for a second in a devil's advocate role. So when I look at Dillashaw, he beat Mike Easton to earn a title shot, and then Barao, he was like the perfect poison to Barao.
Yeah, I will go on record saying, too, I was a Mike Easton fan for a brief period of time, I'm a little bit ashamed
poster
of that.
Poster in your room and everything
else? Not a poster in my room, but definitely saw him walk out with like the Hulk shirt and like Hulk jeans. His nickname was Hulk, Mike Hulk Easton. Maybe next episode we'll talk a little bit about what happened to Mike Hulk Easton. But I miss him. Come back, Mike.
So he beats Easton, then perfect poison to Barao, and then, you know, the Joe Soto fight was what it was. I mean, I could almost get on him. It took him four rounds to take him out. But Joe Soto's a tough guy, so not taking anything away there. I do know what you're saying. I mean, Dominick Cruz has the better pedigree, for sure.
Way better.
I mean, so when's the last time Dominick Cruz lost? To Faber and WEC?
Did he lose to Faber?
Yeah.
Maybe once at 35 when Faber was the champ. Yeah, so, and I don't, you know, WEC is a long time ago at this point in time. You go back to WEC, and a lot of those losses, you almost, like, don't want to count anymore. Brad Pickett beat Mighty Mouse Johnson at that point in time, and Brad Pickett's career has been on a little bit of a downtick at this point in time, but still, I'm not sure I'm ready to, like, chalk up all of those losses and count them as quality losses. As far as I'm concerned, Dominick Cruz hasn't lost.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. So what's your prediction? Is this by decision?
I can't imagine either of these two finishing each other.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Dillashaw has got knockout power. Obviously, he knocked out Barao, but I can't see him hitting Cruz flush enough to end it. And Cruz has never been a huge finisher. I mean, when he finished Mizugaki, all of us were shocked. Nobody was like, oh yeah, that's exactly how I predicted it.
Right.
No, they were like, holy crap, Dominick Cruz is a second level where he finishes people. So I would expect him to like look for an opening, but I expect this to be a 5-round decision. Probably really, really close, but I would expect Cruz.
Okay, so there you have it, folks. You have Gumby picking Cruz by decision. I'm picking Dillashaw by decision. And then we'll go to what I imagine is the co-main event, is Pettis and Alvarez. You have Anthony Pettis coming off a loss to RDA, where he lost his title. Three wins before that beat Gil Melendez, Benson Henderson, Donald Cerrone. And he is the favorite over Alvarez, who in most sports books is plus 250. Alvarez is coming off a win against Gil Melendez in Mexico and then a loss to Cerrone. He's 1-1 in the UFC. And his last fight in Bellator, he beat Michael Chandler. How do you stack up Alvarez and Pettis?
I don't think this one is as close as people think it is, even at plus 250 for Alvarez. Pettis, we forget about Pettis being the beast that he was because he looked so bad against Dos Anjos.
Right.
This is a guy who submitted Benson Henderson in one round.
Mm-hmm.
First round.
Yes.
And quite easily, too.
And then submitted Melendez in the second round.
Exactly. And Benson Henderson is an Abu Dhabi Combat Club wrestler. Like, he went all the way to Abu Dhabi. And yeah, maybe he didn't fare too well there. But that means he's one of the top 16 grapplers, according to them, in the world.
Right.
You know, and yeah, some people aren't number one that actually get there. But that being said, he's a high-level grappler, one round. And I really think that, you know, Alvarez's thing is forward pressure, forward pressure, forward pressure. Pettis has got better footwork than that. His forward pressure is not going to be enough for Anthony Showtime Pettis.
For Alvarez.
Yeah, no, his forward pressure is not going to be enough to stun Anthony. He's not going to be able to stop Pettis just with forward movement. His forward pressure is not RDA's forward pressure.
Right.
So I expect him to keep space and win a kickboxing match here.
So I agree with you completely, and if you could put on your matchmaker hat just for a second, if Alvarez does come out on with a loss in this, he's 1-2 in the UFC. Where does he go from there? Where would you match him up? Who might be someone you could see him fighting after Pettis?
You see, I think this is a case of a guy who came in with making a lot of money right off the bat, right? They wanted to take him away from Bellator. They had to offer him a lot of cash. So I see him getting more of like the Roy Nelson treatment, that no matter how many times he loses in a row, he still winds up with a killer, because part of their thinking is going to be, well, he'll either hang with the killers and we'll now have another beast on our hands, or he's going to keep losing to these guys, and at a certain point, we're just going to cut the ties. You know, he couldn't hang with our top guys. We're not going to feed him wins.
Right.
And I think that happens to a lot of big money guys that come over. You saw that a little bit with Overeem. Overeem lost a couple in a row. He kept still getting killers. And I think you're going to see the same thing for Alvarez. So, you know, whether that's, you know, somebody like Benson Henderson, if he comes off a loss again,
sure,
or somebody like Ally Aquinta, if he keeps winning, or heck, Tony Ferguson. Yeah, you know, I love
Tony Ferguson. I saw where you were going with that.
But they keep giving him killers. He keeps getting beat by killers. I just see him as one of those guys that if he can't crack the top five or the top 10, because he keeps losing the top five and top 10 guys, they're just going to cut him loose. He costs too much.
And then switching off the lightweights, we will move to the heavyweight offering on the main card, which is Matt Meathead Mitrione, a +150 dog, to Travis Ronda Rousey's boyfriend Brown, a -190 favorite. How do you see this one shaken out?
I see this one. God, I hate picking heavyweight fights because there's nothing worse than that one punch knockout power that could possibly come from it. And Mitrione is such a question, because like that last fight,
it was weird, right?
Yeah, it
was a submission loss to Ben Rothwell, who's, I don't really think, known as a submission specialist.
I would be surprised if he, in a 40-fight career, has 3 submissions.
Right.
We'll check that one out. I could be wrong.
And it was a weird submission, too. It was like a front headlock, almost.
Pushed against his body, kind of in the ground. Didn't look like he was being choked, but looked very uncomfortable.
It was like a catch-as-catch-can wrestling move.
So
how do you see this one? Obviously, it's a heavyweight fight. They're going to swing for the fences. Who do you see coming out?
If I was betting on this, I would not bet on Matt Mitrione. But my heart tells me to pick Matt Mitrione, because I don't know. This is a pick with the heart, not with the brain, because I think he's so fun to watch. Want to see them. You know, he's such a good guy. You just want to see him crack that top five or top 10 soon. And he just seems to be like that one fight away.
He's always hovering, right. Always one fight away. Both fighters are coming off of losses as well.
Yeah, and so I would say smart money there. Take Travis Brown. But you got to love Matt Mitrione's hands. Even he loves his hands. If you saw that post-fight interview with Joe Rogan that time, he was like, I love these hands. I have to thank these hands for everything.
He's a weird dude.
Yeah, he's a weird guy, and he's fun to watch because of it.
My take on the heavyweights is it's kind of like a baseball game. You're either going to see something really boring, or you're going to see something really awesome, like a walk-off home run that you'll tell your grandkids about, and there's never an in-between with the heavyweights, but I do expect fireworks.
That is true. I don't think I have in my memory bank one heavyweight fight where I could say, yeah, it was pretty good.
Right. It's either like, wow, that was tough to get through, or wow, that was freaking awesome.
And sometimes, like in the case of Dos Santos and Overeem, it's both.
Right.
Because the first however many minutes that went until Overeem landed that were brutal. They were so hard to get through. And then Overeem hits that, and you're like, oh, okay. Yep, that's what I want from the heavyweight division, right there.
That's why we pay our money. And then the last fight on the main card, it's a four-fight main card. You have Ross Pearson, a minus 170 favorite in most sports books, against Trinaldo, who's a plus 130. Tell us about Trinaldo.
So I'm a big fan of Francisco Trinaldo. Actually, when I started the prelim breakout star column, which you can check again on MMAManifesto.com, the very first one I ever did was Francisco Trinaldo. And actually the 50th one I did too, which was like the 50th anniversary special, was also Francisco Trinaldo because he was still on the prelims at this time. He is like an incredible, incredible wrestler. Lots of power. And he also has got a puncher's chance in just about anybody's fight. I don't expect him to punch with Ross Pearson. Ross Pearson's a hell of a kickboxer and hell of a taekwondo. I mean, I'm pretty sure he has a taekwondo black belt.
Yeah, and he just beat Paul Felder.
Partially because of that kickboxing. So I expect Trinaldo to go after him and take him down here. He would be silly to try to punch with him. And if he does, I don't know too much about Ross Pearson's takedown defense. Has he fought a lot of people off record? You know, like, he fought Charles Rosa. Charles Rosa took a fight with him. That's how he got into the UFC, on, like, 6 days' notice or 7 days' notice. And Rosa couldn't get him down. But it's also on 7 days' notice. Yeah. Ross Pearson, tough guy to take on 7 days' notice. But apart from that, nobody pops out in my head that has fought Ross Pearson as, like, a dominant, powerful wrestling guy. You know, somebody big and muscly, like, you know, Gleason Tebow, or, you know, somebody who's like got some freak strength behind him.
Right.
Trinaldo's got some freak strength behind him. And if I'm not mistaken, he's a fairly large underdog here too. So if you're going parlay hunting, Francisco Trinaldo might be the kind of guy you want to just tack on to a couple of those.
And we were talking off air actually about the surprising UFC win streaks that pop up here and there. Trinaldo is riding a 4-fight win streak.
Yeah, maybe the most underrated win streak in the UFC. 4 in a row in the lightweight division, which is
full of killers.
You know, I'm constantly talking about it's 100 people deep now, and you can go to person like 80, and person 80 is a killer too. You know, and the top 25 are all really tough to beat and could all beat each other for the most part. So I would see a 4-fight win streak. If he could get past Ross Pearson here, he's going to get some very interesting competition coming up. The Iaquintas and the Michael Chiesas of the world.
Sure. Very interesting. So that does it for the main card. It's a 4-fight main card. And we will segue now into your two most recent interviews. You caught up with Invicta FC president Shannon Knapp and Charles Rosa. So we will play those for you guys right now.
So this is Dan Gumby Vreeland here with the president of Invicta FC, Shannon Knapp. Shannon, thanks so much for popping by and talking to us in what must be a very busy week for you. How are preparations and promotions going for Invicta 15 this weekend? And how are things just shaking up?
Well, first of all, thank you for, you know, having me on the show. We certainly appreciate it. We always appreciate the support. You know, things are coming together. You know, it's always hectic. I leave tomorrow morning, so it's all the last minute, you know, shipping, getting ready, all that kind of stuff. The card's intact. We've had some injuries, but been able to, you know, fill those spots. So it's a good week.
Yeah, you mentioned some of those injuries. I know Lisa Ellis went out injured. Are there any fighters on the preliminary part of the card that we should be watching out for here, especially with a couple of names changing at the last second?
Well, you know how I am. I think you should watch all of them. You know, I think that all my athletes, you know, are amazing and worth watching. So, you know, as I look around, I mean, these are good matchups, you know. So, you know, certainly, you know, you want to pay attention, sorry about that, to, of course, Lacey Shuckman and the Mizuki Inoue fight, you know, Amanda Bell and Adion, that's going to be a good fight. You know, Megan Anderson, Amberly Brock. So, you know, my thing is that once I say one name, I always end up going down through the list. So,
and I've interviewed you before, and I can definitely confirm that you do like to give everybody a little airtime.
The thing is if you forget to mention someone or you don't mention them or something like that, I always feel like I'm planting a seed in their mind that maybe their bout or their fight is not as important. So, you know, I always want them all to feel like they're important to, you know, the event.
And that's really been the beautiful thing about Invicta, too, is that it brings publicity to so many girls who would otherwise not really have a place to fight, and now it's on Fight Pass, and now it's giving all kinds of extra publicity. So that is really the beautiful thing about it, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, you know, what we hoped for. You know, when I did the deal with the UFC, is, you know, we certainly hoped that it gave our athletes more exposure, and, you know, people that were already fans of the UFC that weren't aware of Invicta kind of introduced us to a new fan base.
Yeah, excellent. So one of the names that I've got to say that we have to talk about, and I have to kind of put this one on a little bit of a pedestal, even though you don't want to, is the Cyborg fight. So obviously Cyborg has a lot of talk going on about her. She's in the news all the time. Is there a different kind of feeling for you heading into a Cyborg fight? Is there a different amount of hype, or is it just another night that you're promoting fights?
Well, you know, I mean, Cyborg certainly brings a lot of exposure, you know, to Invicta as far as, you know, her status in the sport. But, you know, it's always exciting. You know, it's a bonus when you have Cyborg on just because she's a real pleasure to watch. You know, she's so dominating in her division. You know, so certainly there is a level of excitement when she does compete. But, you know, like I said, I think once again, I think all my cards are exciting. So, unfortunately, you're always going to get that same answer out of me.
Yeah, I figured I would. So, the next question I have about her is that, you know, there was talk of her coming down to 135 pounds for like a test run, or 140 pounds for a test run for this fight. And then right about the time where the matchmaking for that was happening was when Ronda Rousey got knocked out by Holly Holm. And suddenly Cyborg was back at 45. She was not interested in making the crossover to the UFC. Is that still something she's completely not interested in? She's staying Invicta, or is it something that she's thinking about in the future? Or have you had any insight into that thought process?
You know, I think it's something that, you know, is always on her mind, you know, what the opportunity could be if she does go down to 135, you know, in the fights that she's interested in. I mean, could we see, you know, if Holly Holm stays victorious in all of her upcoming matches and things like that, could we see that being a possibility in the future? I think, you know, anything is possible. I think it pretty much comes down, you know, to what Cyborg wants to do, you know, and making that drop and making that cut down. And, you know, and finding comfort in knowing that, you know, I guess maybe comfort's not the word. You know, just finding the mindset to say, yes, this is what I'm going to do and be all in and you know, go for it. So it is something, I guess, to answer your question, you know, in a shorter way, it is something that is still on the table, something that is talked about, but there is no schedule for it or, you know, anything put in place at this time of when, where, and all that kind of stuff.
Yep. So The big fight that everybody's talking about now is released earlier this week, was UFC 197. Holm is going to fight Miesha Tate. Miesha Tate has said in the past that she is interested in coming up in fighting Cyborg. If that was still on the table, would you expect her to be more into the idea of somebody coming to her weight class in fighting? Is it mostly a weight cut thing?
You know, I mean, I think anything is possible. You know, I think that... You know, just to reiterate, Chris is, you know, a signed UFC athlete. So, you know, those are discussions that, you know, they have internally. And when they decide what they want to do, you know, then they'll, of course, let me know what their thought is. But I'm always supportive of whatever it is that they decide, you know, will be the next course of action. So, yeah, I think anything is possible. You know, I think right now... You know, of course, Miesha is going to focus on Holly Holm because that's a big fight for her. And, you know, I think that after that fight, we'll probably, you know, have a better idea of how things are going to shape up in the future for Chris. Or, you know, with a possibility that you indicated Miesha had considered going up in weight.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm just going to switch gears a little bit on you here because we're kind of heavy on the Cyborg kick, and I know you like to spread it out.
Oh, that's all right.
To talk about the Invicta card in March, because in March you're doing another card. And the rumor that I'm hearing here is that your 125-pound champion, Barb Horchak, is taking some time off, and as a result, there is a thought about having a 125-pound tournament. Is there any merit to those rumors?
Yeah, no, that is definitely, I mean, we will kick off a tournament this year. We're still, you know, looking at brackets, looking at which way to go. You know, the thing with the 125-pounders is you've got all this really young, new talent, you know, in that division. Then you've kind of got this gap where you have like one or two that's kind of in between. And then you have, you know, what I would call the more seasoned vets of the sport, you know. So trying to bridge that gap and do a tournament that would, you know, be benefit to everybody and not throwing someone in the deep end and then not giving, you know, someone with, you know, like a vet that has a lot more fights, you know, given an opponent that has significant less fights. So it's a lot to work through. But we are definitely going to do the tournament this year, maybe even two tournaments, just because of that gap in between, you know, that division.
Interesting. So second question there to follow up on that. So from the sounds of it, it sounds like this is going to be a multiple night tournament, not trying to pull something like Ryzen did in Japan and trying to put it all in one night.
No. Yeah, no, I wouldn't. You know, I'm not looking to do that at this time. I think that, you know, we have a lot of athletes that need to stay busy. So I think to, like, you know, take up that many spots, you know, wouldn't be fair to everybody. So,
okay.
You know, those are some of the arguments that are going on internally, you know, with myself, I guess, with, you know, trying to make sure that everybody stays consistently busy and that, you know, we're making the right decisions with the tournament.
That makes a lot of sense. So because we're an MMA outlet and we try to get the inside scoop on everything we possibly can, we're just going to ask, and you could feel free to shoot us down on this one, if you are willing to throw out a couple of names that you are considering for that tournament, because there's a couple that popped to my mind instantly, but I was wondering if you could probably clue us in on one or two that seem like definites.
Well, you know, once again, I mean, I could, you know, there are a lot of names, like I call them, you know, the young up-and-coming athletes. And then, of course, on the other side, when you've got, like, the Vanessa Portos, the Jennifer Mayas, the, I can see her face, Roxanne Monteferi, or, you know, you've got Sarah D'Alio that's down on the 125. You know, so, you know, when you think about that side of the tournament, you know, there's a lot of seasoned athletes, a lot of very talented athletes. Then on the other side, you know, you're looking at athletes like Andrea Lee, Rachel Ostovich, Chris Stanley, Shan Fan, you know. So there's a lot, you know, but there's that big gap. So you kind of understand what I mean when
yeah,
I say that gap.
Yeah, absolutely.
But,
it would even be fun to see a tournament that's got the young side on one side and the little bit more seasoned vet on the other side, and the finals is going to be a mixture of the two.
Well, you know, that is definitely, you know, I mean, like I said, we're really playing around with a lot of ideas to see which way makes the most sense, you know. So I think, you know, you're going to hear a lot more about it in the next, you know, within this next few weeks. And, you know, I think we may start to, you know, like I said, it's possible we, you know, could do two tournaments, you know. Everything's really up in the air right at the moment, to be honest with you.
Sounds good. Well, we'll look forward to hearing more of that. We're going to let you go now because I know that you're very busy with your fight week preparations. Before we let you go, is there anything that you want to tell us about Saturday's fight card?
Well, I think it's going to be an amazing card. I think it's going to be a night full of action-packed, you know, combat sports. I think that if you love the sport, you know, certainly tune in and watch on UFC Fight Pass, because a lot of these athletes, if you don't know them, I promise you won't forget them after you see them compete under the banner.
And I can definitely vouch for that. So thank you again one more time, and I really appreciate you guys, or you stopping by and chatting with us. Thanks.
Oh, no worries. Thank you for having me on.
All right, this is Dan Gumby Vreeland with Top Turtle, and I'm here with American Top Team and Sit Your Tong product, Charles Boston Strong Rosa. Charles fights this weekend at UFC Fight Night 81 in Boston against Jimmy Hettis. Charles, your training has been split a little bit between American Top Team and Sit Your Tong in Boston. Where are you at now, and how's that training going for you?
Yeah, everything's going great. I'm in the best shape of my life. I guess there's a couple little news alerts that I think nobody's really aware of, but I just got final confirmation a few hours ago. You guys are the first to hear it, that Jimmy Hettis pulled out of the fight. So I won't be fighting Jimmy Hettis. I will still be fighting on UFC Fight Night January 17th in Boston. They're looking for they said they have an opponent. They just haven't given me the name yet. So, I mean, I'll still be fighting. I'm still ready to go. Just a big opponent change. So, you know, just found that out a couple hours ago. And as far as the other question, yeah, I've been training American Top Team as my main gym. When I come home for the holidays, to Boston and stuff like that, I got, you know, a gym, City of Tong in Boston, so I don't miss a beat. I like to see my family a lot and stuff like that. So that's the gym, the secondary gym I train at when I'm up in Boston visiting the family.
So I'm going to kick it back to that first point because that's really interesting. I'm glad that we got to be the first people to hear that. So you have no idea on who the new name is at all? It's completely up in the air to you?
Yes, they told me. They told me that they do have a replacement, and I will be fighting, but it won't be against Jimmy Hettis because Jimmy Hettis is out.
So that's really, really, really interesting. I know CES MMA, which you had your start with, has a bunch of guys around that weight class that are really fun to watch. So hopefully it's one of those local guys and we get a local and local flavor. To mention that second part, you said you train at Sit Ya Tong when you were up visiting family and stuff. Do you have preparations with them in a plan set in place to get some like last second preparations in before the fight so that you're not, you know, at some completely random gym or just taking time off of training?
Yeah, for sure. I'm real close with Marco Grati. You know, he welcomes me with open arms like family, so he says it every time I come. Your family with us, so definitely got a good relationship with him. He said I come to the gym any time I want, so you know, I'll definitely be using that gym when I'm back. When I get to Boston on Wednesday, I fly in Wednesday, January 13th, so I got like 5 days to, you know, put the finishing touches on and just, you know, get a couple good sweats in to finish the weight cut. But, yeah, I'll be able to go there. And then they also got the UFC gym in Boston, which is open to all the fighters, too. So I shouldn't have an issue finding a place to stay. But definitely, you know, that gym's like a second home to me. So
it's always nice to have the home field advantage. And speaking of home field advantage, this is your second time fighting in Boston. You also fought 5 times in Rhode Island, which is close to your hometown. Do you feel like much more pressure, or do you feel much more relaxed when you're fighting in front of your hometown fans and your hometown crowd?
Yeah, that's what I love. I love fighting in the hometown around million people, places, and things. I mean, that's what makes, I mean, mostly all people, but mostly me. That's what makes me a great fighter. The environment I grew up in, the people I grew up around, that's what makes me a fighter. So when I get back to Boston, I smell that crisp, the cool air, all the people and all the familiar faces and buildings and the environment that I've seen that I grew up in is what's going to bring the fighter out of me. So I'm really excited. And, you know, I'm undefeated up in the Northeast, and no one's ever beat me up there. So I'm really excited to get back up there.
And we hope it stays that way because, as you know, or you may not know, we're from Massachusetts as well. So we're fans of the local flavor there. Speaking of that local flavor, so this is the first time you will have fought since the UFC rolled out their Reebok fight kits, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and usually you're the type of guy who likes to represent the local flavor too, right? You got the Bruins jersey on all the time. You're a big Bruins fan. Is that something where you're going to have to try to find a way to, like, pay homage to Boston in a new and different way? Or have you thought about that at all?
Yeah, I mean, I got one little trick up my sleeve. Not sure if it's going to work. I'll talk to Dana White when I get to Boston. But as far as the Reebok deal, the only little thing I have is that the Boston Bruins jersey is a Reebok jersey. The Bruins is sponsored by Reebok as well, so there's a possibility I could talk to Dana and see what he says. I mean, ultimately, I think it's his decision, and see if I'm able to walk out with it. If not, I think, already represent Boston coming out the way I did last time and stuff like that. I think the fans all know who I am now. You know, my nickname is Boston Strong, so when they announce my name, Charles Boston Strong Rosa, they'll have that if I'm not able to walk out in the jersey. And I'm also walking out to shipping up to Boston for Dropkick Murphy. So that would be the best way to pay homage to Boston, my city, and New England. But that's kind of what I'm looking at now.
I like it. So the other thing I was going to throw out is you're also a fairly big Boston fan across the board. The Patriots game this weekend, or next weekend rather, is going to be right at the same time you're weighing in. Has that caused you any mental angst going into weigh-ins?
Well, yeah, a little bit. I mean, I definitely don't want to miss any of the games. The only thing is the weigh-ins start at 4 o'clock, and they always start right on time, so they're never really late. Like, when the Chevrolet weigh-ins start at 4, they start at 4. They usually get us out of there pretty quick because, you know, the guy, the fighters got to eat, rehydrate, and they want to, the UFC wants to get us out of there as soon as possible, so all the fighters are as healthy as possible. So I'm hoping to be back at the hotel by 5 o'clock and maybe, you know, miss the first Patriots touchdown, but that's all.
And it doesn't usually take them all that long, does it?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, hopefully I don't miss too much, but I think I'll still be able to catch the at least a solid second half, things like that.
Awesome. So, final question, and we're just going to kind of wrap it up here, too. So originally I had a bunch of questions about how you feel about what you're going to do game plan wise, but obviously that completely goes out the window not knowing who your opponent is now. So I'll just switch it to a little bit more of a generic question here. So both me and my co-host here are huge submission grapplers. We love to compete in tournaments all the time. What is your favorite submission that you like to hit either in MMA or in training jiu-jitsu?
My favorite submission, and actually I've won three fights in my career, two amateur fights and one pro fight, in the Peruvian necktie. It's a really cool move I learned. I thought it was just like one of those flashy moves when I first learned it, and I was like, oh, it's just one of those crazy moves that they teach you. But I started hitting it, and then I started really, you know, adapting and making adjustments to it, making my move, and it's not only just like a really cool move, but it's also one that's effective. I mean, I put a couple guys to sleep with it, so it's I would say that's my favorite one, Peruvian necktie.
Awesome. So before I let you go, is there anything that you want to share with your fans before I cut you off the air here?
Yeah, just if you guys could all just give me a follow on Instagram, Twitter. It's Charles Rosa MMA. You can check me out there or find me on Facebook or my Facebook fan page, Charles Rosa, or go to www.chuckysfight.com, chuckysfight.com. That's a charity that my dad started to help teens with substance abuse. So this is, you know, it's all for a good cause. So if you guys just check all that stuff out, and, you know, hopefully I'll see you January 17th at the Garden.
So thanks a lot, Charles.
All right, thanks a lot, brother.
Yep.
Later.
Bye.
All right, so really interesting stuff there, your interview with Charles Rosa. I felt almost like we were a part of news. We were newsmakers there.
Yeah, we were newsmakers, and we got that stuff up pretty quick. And actually, now that the interview is over, we've had a little bit of time to think about it. We actually got the fill-in fighter for who Charles Rosa will be facing. He's facing 5-0 prospect out of Brazil, Augusto Mendes. Augusto Mendes with a couple of submissions on his record. I don't personally know too much about him, and there's not usually a UFC signing that I've not heard very much about, but just the gut reaction there. Rosa is so experienced. His grappling is so tight. His kickboxing working with Tsitutong has been really, really solid. So I can't imagine somebody fighting that close to home, that much experience, going to face off against a 5-0 guy and have all too much trouble.
So to your knowledge, is he coming up from Brazil? Does he train in – I imagine he trains in the States. He had to have been stateside already.
Bio that I saw on him had him training in Brazil, but he might have a sister camp that he trains at in the U.S. Again, I didn't get very much time to fill in because I got home today. I saw that, and we were over here to tape it shortly after that. So, yeah, I don't know too much about him. I do know that in the past he has fought at 35, which means that he is going to come up in weight here too, which is probably due to like weight cut situations, right? He doesn't have time to cut his usual amount of weight, plus – you know, they're looking for a guy for 45, not for 35. As a result, you know, like, I can't imagine a guy going up in weight, short notice fight, only five fights, is going to fight somebody like Rosa in Rosa's backyard and take the fight to him. You know,
agreed.
I think this is once got Rosa written all over it.
So that's a Fight Pass early prelim. Another one on there that I'm very excited about is Paul Felder, the favorite, versus Darren Cruikshank.
Yeah, and again, this is one of the ones that, like, God, I hope Cruikshank doesn't shoot the takedown. And I know he's got the takedowns to do this. Very underrated wrestler.
If you were his coach, that's what you would recommend.
Oh, if I was his coach, you know, we would have been drilling how to avoid a kick to the dome so that I can hit my takedown, because his wrestling is largely underrated. He's a big, strong – I mean, look at the size of his legs. And what we want to see him do with those legs is to try to kick somebody's face off, and he's good at it. But you don't want to kickbox Paul Felder.
No.
Nobody wants to kickbox Paul Felder. Edson Barboza is the only one who wanted to kickbox Paul Felder, and a little bit of Ross Pearson. Ross Pearson, that one was a little bit more of avoiding. Barboza took it right to him. They traded leg kicks for a while. I feel like Barboza, if he had his choice, would probably approach it just a little differently,
now,
too.
Cruikshank is also coming off two losses in a row and no contest before that. If Felder beats him, do you see him getting the old snip, snip, cut,
yeah,
cut?
He's so fun to watch, though. You know, like I know Dana White has in his heart a place for all the guys who are fun to watch, but at a certain point, you know, you're not winning. You can't win. One more reason, if I was his coach, I'd be like, tell him to go in there and wrestle, you know?
Sure.
Because that's what he's got to do to beat Paul Felder. He's not going to beat him with a knockout, or at least I don't think he's going to beat him with a knockout.
And the last of the early prelims, you have Latifi, the favorite, versus O'Connell.
Yeah, and I like Sean O'Connell because he's a Jeremy Gumby Horn guy. Another plug for second Gumby there. First Gumby.
He's first Gumby.
Yeah, okay, sorry. Sorry for calling him second Gumby. Jeremy Horn, don't get mad. We did an interview with him not that long ago. I'm sure he won't be mad. I love O'Connell because he is a Gumby Horn guy. But Latifi, I think he gets a bad rap because of the time he filled in that main event. And maybe people forget this,
was
too.
Was it Mousasi?
Yeah, he fought Gegard Mousasi on short notice for Alexander Gustafsson. Gustafsson dropped out of the fight, was supposed to fight Mousasi. Latifi took it on, I think, 2 or 3 days' notice. He, like, weighed in like 24 hours after having heard about it, and the performance wasn't great. But since then, he's looked pretty darn good. He's, again, a guy who can wrestle. He's big, he's heavy, and he's got knockout power. And O'Connell tends to want to stand in front of you and trade, and that worked when he beat Perroche. He beat Anthony the Hippo Perroche, who I'm also a fan of because I like his jiu-jitsu, but I don't think you want to stand in front of Latifi.
Yeah. So worth noting, these Fight Pass early prelims, they're pretty nice. Felder, Cruikshank, I think, you know, we were talking about this earlier. Fight Pass, the subscription service that Sage Northcutt built, they are certainly putting better fights on Fight Pass to really drive viewership to it. They said that Poirier and
Duffy
was their highest rated Fight Pass prelim ever. Silva's fighting on Fight Pass in March, so nothing to complain about there from a fan's perspective.
Yeah, they're clearly making it not all about Sage Northcutt. And before we leave those Fight Pass prelims too, there are two other fights on there that we'll just say in passing. Rob Font, a Sit Utah Boston guy, fighting Joey Gomez, who's stepping in for injured Patrick Williams. Font, crazy knockout power. Hasn't fought in a while since he knocked out George Root. People might have forgotten about the knockout of George Root. He's really fun to watch. And then Francimar Barroso is fighting a late injury replacement in Elvis Mutapic. Mutapic, also fun guy to watch. He was all over World Series of Fighting. I'm pretty sure he's like 4-1 in World Series of Fighting. So a fun prospect there, too.
Nice. And then moving over to the FS1 prelims, the one I'm most excited about is Ben Saunders, the favorite, versus Patrick Cote. I am picking Ben Saunders because I will always pick the guy who pulled off that omoplata. Was that the first in the UFC?
That's the first ever omoplata, and we almost saw the first go-go plata the other day with Joe Soto.
That's right.
And I was half rooting for it and half not because I bet against him. So, yeah, we'll just say that a little bit for, a little bit against. You always want to see the rubber guard in action.
I always end up just rooting for submissions. As long as I don't have money on a particular fighter, I root for submissions.
Well, then you're definitely rooting for Ben Saunders.
Exactly. Because
his ground game is always interesting and fun to watch. I know he trains out of a bunch of different camps sometimes, but he's been spending a lot of time with Eddie Bravo.
That's right.
And you know, only good things happen when you spend time with Eddie Bravo. Once again, ask our boy Tony Ferguson. He'll tell you all about how things go when you hang out with Eddie Bravo.
Now, Cote, it's interesting. Cote is coming off 2 wins off of 2 veterans, Riggs and Berkman. Where do you kind of see him and this point in his career?
I think he needs a guy like Ben Saunders because, you know, Joe Riggs, fun as hell guy to watch,
yeah.
But what does a win over Joe Riggs tell you?
Not much.
Not much in 2016 or 2015 when he got it. And I feel kind of like the same way for his other win. What does it really tell you about him as a fighter or how ready he is for a title shot? Probably nothing. And in order to get him up into that tier where he starts fighting somebody like Jacare, he's got to beat a couple of people like Ben Saunders.
Now, you also have Tim Bosch, who's semi-local. He's out of Maine, is he not?
Yeah, he's out of Maine.
And he's fighting Ed Shortfuse Herman.
Two guys who every single time I see him on a card, I forget that they're on the card. And that's nothing against either of them, but like their matchup always like looks underwhelming. I don't instantly go, oh, yeah, I want to see it. But they both always bring it. And they're both always fun to watch. And the actually interesting thing I saw when I was looking at odds is that Bosch is actually a huge underdog.
Yes, correct.
He's like a 2-to-1 underdog here, which was interesting to me because he's got that crazy knockout power too. I mean, I'll always remember him getting the crap beat out of him for two rounds against Yushin Okami, and he throws one uppercut and wins the fight.
He's lost three out of his last four.
Yeah, well, and that's probably why he's the underdog. But, you know, again, one of those guys you could probably throw into the end of this as the end of a parlay and, you know, probably pick up your odds a little bit.
Right. That's a good call. Now, what's going on with Chris Wade?
So Chris Wade is fighting Mehdi Bogdad, who is off of one of the Ultimate Fighter seasons.
Conor versus Uriah.
Yeah, because Marabek Taisimov is out with an injury. I'm trying to keep up with all of these injuries because I can't quite remember what every single one has. I want to say his is a – oh, no, his might have been the visa issue. Because now that I'm thinking about it, Abdul Karim Adilov had a meniscus tear. I don't know what happened to Jimmy Hettis still. Taisimov, I think, is a visa issue, possibly.
Visa issue is really going around.
Yeah,
it's contagious.
Yeah. Patrick Williams dropped out of that Font fight. There's a whole bunch of injuries. And it's funny, because when this fight card came out, who's the first person on the fight card you thought was going to get injured?
Dominic Cruz,
exactly. That's the answer to every fight card, even when he's not on it. Who do you think is going to get injured is Dominic Cruz. So the funny thing is we were like, oh, I bet you Dominic Cruz gets hurt. Wonder who the fill-in replacement is. And pretty much everybody on the card except for him got injured.
I love it. The irony.
And then the only other fight on there, too, is, oh, another fill-in fighter. I forgot about this. Maximo Blanco was supposed to fight originally Dennis Bermudez. He now fights Luke Sanders, who is the RFA champion. Which is, again, one of my favorite lower promotions. RFA, a lot of fun to watch. And I don't know if you know anything about Sanders, but I actually think he's got a very similar style to Bermudez sometimes in that he's, you know, compact puncher, willing to go to his wrestling if he needs to, and probably has a better gas tank than Blanco, too. So that one, while it originally was a very, very fun fight, I don't think it's lost as much luster as people think it has because Sanders is a little bit better than people think he is.
All right. Very nice. So that, I think, wraps up the entire card, no?
That is the entire card as it stands now. Stay tuned soon to see if more people get into it.
Very true, with a couple of days to go. So that's the card, and we're going to end on a game here. It's our first episode. It's the first of the new year. It's early January. Last year, Gumby, there are 10 UFC champions, and the 10 champions who started the year in January as champions, only three remain champion throughout the course of the whole year.
That's my kind of year in MMA, too, because I love when the divisions have some parity in them and things get mixed up. I don't watch to see the same 10 guys win over and over again.
So there was a lot of shakeup. So we're going to go down the list, and we are going to have our non-existent intern keep track of this, and we will revisit it on December 31st and see who is more right as to which champion will still be which champion in January will still be champion when the clock strikes midnight on December 31st into January 1st of 2017. So I will start you off with Gumby. Does Joanna Jędrzejczyk retain the title throughout the entire year?
I can't imagine anybody in that division beating Jędrzejczyk. Claudia Gadelha has probably got what it takes because she gave her such a good match in the first one. But if Gedalia doesn't beat her in a rematch, I can't imagine anybody in that division.
What do you think? Rose, perhaps? I mean, Rose could maybe take a tour, but I would still pick JJ.
I actually think the person I want to see in the title fight after that is not Rose Namajunas. I want to see Tisha Torres, another Massachusetts local from Fall River, Massachusetts, Tisha Torres.
Wait, but she doesn't still train out of...
She trains out of Coconut Creek, Florida with America Top Team.
Sure.
But... she is a local, and I'd much rather see her fight Jan Jacek. She's 6-0 with wins over Rose and Paige VanZant.
That's a great point. So, okay, you have JJ retaining her title all year, as do I. So that's at the 115-pound women's strawweight. Moving up a weight class, you have Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson, the stalwart of the division, the only champion they've ever had. Do you see him retaining his title throughout the course of the year?
I want to pick against him so bad, but I'm not going to.
Henry Cejudo on the mind, or anyone there?
Like Cejudo's wrestling, would love to see one of those other 125ers step up and scare me. I personally think he got beat against Ian McCall all those years back, and I don't think anybody's been close since.
Yeah.
Nobody else in the UFC has been close to beating this man.
All right, so I agree with you there. So JJ and DJ, virtual locks to retain their titles. Moving up to 135 men's, you have TJ Dillashaw. You picked Cruz earlier, so you're saying...
I'm saying Cruz. So, and I'm not going to pull some kind of BS where I say Dillashaw comes back and gets it back. I think Cruz wins this, and I'm not saying that I think Cruz keeps it, because there are a bunch of good prospects at 35 that could potentially take this from him. Aljamain Sterling, if he does sign back with the UFC, is a fun one to watch. Cody Garbrandt is fighting John Lineker, and either of those two are fun to watch. That's in UFC Pittsburgh, headlined by Cerrone.
Yeah, Lineker interests me a lot just because he's such a hard hitter for that division.
Yeah, just like the weird weight and mental things with him are the only things that I think right now are keeping him from being that really top tier. But there are a lot of fun guys to watch there, and I think at some point in time, the title's going to change.
I agree with you, because I also think of, I'm going to butcher his name, Asuncio.
Oh, Rafael Asuncio.
Who it will be coming off of injury and beat TJ Dillashaw in the past. So I agree with you with that division. I'm also going to say, no, TJ will not be the champion come December 31st. Sticking at 135, but moving to the women, Holly Holm, will she retain her title throughout the year?
So I'm going to say the least popular thing at the present moment. I don't think she does.
Wow.
And this is going to be kind of surprising, but I think, especially now that I know that Rousey is not taking the immediate rematch, which we talked about earlier on the show, she's going to take some time, heal up, work on her footwork. I think that the drive that she has and what she knows is at stake, if she fixes that footwork and just can get inside, I think she could take it back from Holm. I don't think that Holm is untouchable like people think it does. And I think that was the problem that we built up in our head with Rousey. And we're making the same mistake with Holm, I think.
That's a great point. And I agree. I mean, listen, I think that Holly Holm beats Ronda Rousey 7 out of 10 times. But that is to say that if Ronda Rousey could get her to the ground, it's a whole new ocean and Ronda's the shark in that ocean. So yeah, I agree with you in that regard. I'm also going to say we have not disagreed yet once that Holly Holm will not be champion come the end of the year.
I'm kind of surprised you said that, because I thought that you were going to be...
But I also said earlier in the show that I like the Misha Tate matchup.
I could see
Misha Tate just ground and pounding her.
I don't see that. But that being said, it's MMA. Anything can happen.
And then, listen, let's also just to button it up, that division, that women's division, it's so new. There's going to be fluctuation there.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Yeah. And there are a couple of other 35ers in there, too. Nobody's mentioned Juliana Lima. But Juliana Lima has looked dangerous in every fight she's had, but because there's so much of this weird stuff happening at the top with Tate, Rousey, Holm, possibly Cyborg. We didn't even mention Cyborg might get in there, as right. We talked with Knapp a little bit about that. But, there's lots of opportunities there for her to lose her title.
All right, moving to the 145-pound featherweight division. Conor McGregor is king. Does he remain king of 145 pounds come December 31st?
I'm going to defer to you first on this one.
That is a great question, because I'm going back and forth in my mind on it, and I am going to say no. And here's why. I think Frankie Edgar is the perfect poison to Conor McGregor, and I think if they ever end up fighting, which I assume they will, I would pick Frankie Edgar in that fight.
Yeah, and that's pretty much the mental game I was just playing. does Frankie Edgar have what it takes to beat him?
And well, and here's the other thing. For this particular game, sorry to cut you off, Connor might only defend it once.
Yeah.
So he's a very safe pick to say he will keep the title all year. Because there might only be one defense.
Yeah, and I don't... this is going to sound terrible. I don't think Frankie winds up with a title shot in 2016. I just have that feeling that everything is going to go wrong for this guy. Because it has, right? Since he beat BJ Penn and then lost his title, since that's happened, what's gone right for Frankie Edgar? He's won every fight he has. They won't promote him for anything. He hasn't gotten the title shots. And now he's getting passed up again. Is he going to sit on the shelf? He's not that kind of fighter. He's never sat on the shelf for a title fight. Does he fight somebody else and mess it up? Who's to say he doesn't fight Aldo? Could he beat Aldo the second time? I'm going to pick Aldo.
Sure.
You know, so I have this really bad gut feeling that Frankie Edgar doesn't get the shot. So I'm going to go with Conor McGregor keeping it.
Okay.
And that'll be our first disagreement there. I'll take Conor McGregor champion January 1st, 2017.
Okay. I like it. Our first disagreement on that. And then moving up one more weight class that Conor might be heavily involved in, also all signs point to, RDA is your current champion at 155 pounds. Is RDA still the 155-pound champion come December? And I'm going to take this first, and I'm going to say no, based on this fact. That division is so stacked. I know he looks like a world beater right now, but come August, come November, whenever it is he's fighting a Tony Ferguson, a Khabib off injury, I could see him falling. I could, you know, I want to see a Pettis rematch.
Yeah, I'm going to go on record saying I don't want to see a Pettis rematch because that was so one-sided to me. But we've talked so much about how much I'm a Tony Ferguson fan. I love his submission game. I love Nurmagomedov as a coming off an injury. I'm going to say he keeps it, though. Last year was crazy for title defenses and title losses. I don't think Connor's going to beat him. I think he's going to wrestle Connor to death. And I don't know. I think Ferguson gets overlooked for at least one of those defenses. You know, they go to somebody like a Pettis rematch, or if Alvarez pulls off the upset that I, you know, previously said I don't think he'll get. I think RDA handles both of those guys, and I worry about Nurmagomedov and the amount of layoff he's had.
Sure. So that's another disagreement right there. Moving up one more division, you have the 170-pound champion Robbie Lawler. What are your early feelings? Is he still champion come December?
I can't imagine that at any point in time he's going to have all of these close battles, and not one of them is going to go the wrong way.
Right.
Like, I would pay to see him fight Condit again. I'll go on record saying I think the third round was Condit's. Okay, you can, you know, judge me on that one. I'd pay for a Condit rematch. I'd like to see him fight Damian Maya. I would like to see him fight Tyrone Woodley. I'd like to see him fight Hendricks again.
A returning GSP, perhaps?
Returning GSP. I think that division has too many choices. And I think probably the one that should be the scariest for him is Damian Maya. And not because Damian Maya has got, you know, some magic potion or some magic game plan that nobody else has got, but he's the only one on that list who's not going to stand in front of him.
Right.
He's not going to stand in front of Robbie Lawler, and everybody else has.
Right.
Well, so I'm going to say Lawler is not the champ.
And I'm also going to say that, and based on a lot of the same reasons you just brought up, but since Robbie Lawler won that title, we have just seen him. I mean, he fought... since he first fought for the title in March of 2014, 5 rounds against Hendricks. That summer, to re-earn the title shot, 5 rounds against Matt Brown. And then to win the title, 5 rounds again against Johnny Hendricks. He fought 15 tough rounds that year and then came back last July and fought a crazy war with Rory McDonald.
That one only went 4 rounds, right? If I'm not mistaken.
That only went 4 rounds, but
it was
a
four
war.
Bloody rounds.
Yeah, I mean, they killed a part of each man's soul, and then he comes back with the Condit fight.
Yeah, and so I love the ending of that fight, too. I want to say when they both put up the arms up, that's a freeze frame for MMA
classic.
History right there.
I found the stare down with Rory between, I think it was rounds 3 and 4, to be like a classic moment, too. But, I mean, math off the top of my head, which I'm never good at, I think you're looking at since March of 2014, this man has fought 24 very tough rounds.
Yeah, and I think your math is right off the top of my head. I used to teach math, but I'm pretty sure that's 24 rounds of just brutality.
Someone's going to pick him off.
And yeah, it's only a matter of time, I think, before either one of these swing rounds doesn't go his way or, you know, finally one of these blows counts.
Yeah, I agree. And in each of these fights that we've just discussed, it could have gone either way. He's fought some razor-thin battles. So we agree there on Robbie Lawler. Moving up to middleweight, and one I think we are going to disagree on just based on how we feel about this particular fighter. I am a massive Chris Weidman fan. He is no longer the champion. Luke Rockhold is. How do you see this one going for Luke Rockhold this
year? I've got it still with Rockhold at the end of the year.
I thought you were going to say
that. I think Rockhold is way better than people think he is because of that first fight in the UFC. Everybody thinks roundhouse kick to the face from Vitor Belfort makes this guy, you know, like he's going to got a glass jaw, but he doesn't.
It was a juiced up Vitor
Belfort. Okay, yeah, and if you want to argue that it's a juiced up Vitor too, but it's also just a lucky shot. How many times are you going to get heel kicked in the back of the head? Probably not very many. And on top of that, he showed that in addition to being a pretty damn good kickboxer, he pretty much out-wrestled Chris Weidman after Weidman gave him his back. You know, you would expect somebody of Chris Weidman's wrestling caliber to be able to, you know, get up from his back a little bit easier than that, and he didn't. He put him down, and he kept him down. And the other reason I'm going to say he keeps it is I just don't see a lot of viable options to beat him. You know, I think Yoel Romero lost to Jacare.
Right.
I really believe that that decision was messed up, too. And I don't think Yoel Romero's got it. Now, Jacare is going to need a win or two to get him back in the mix there. So I don't think he's an option to even probably fight for the title in 2016. If it is, it's at the way end of 2016.
I agree. I could almost see, just from a UFC marketing perspective, getting the most bang for their buck out of these title fights at middleweight. I could actually see if Silva beats Bisping, I think they're going to throw Silva to him.
Yeah.
Because it's a money fight.
I have a really, really, really gut feeling that this is an Anderson Silva title fight set up once he beats Bisping. And the sad thing for Bisping is I don't think it's a title set up for him. Even if he beats Anderson, I think they've got four or five guys lined up to keep him out of the title picture still. Whereas I think that this is a fight that they want Anderson back in. And the other person we obviously didn't talk about was Vitor Belfort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously most likely more clean than he has been in the past. I don't think that he is still tough enough to beat Rockhold, especially with the hatred Rockhold has for him. I just think Rockhold's going to see red and you know, crush him. So it's either that fight or Romero next. So I think his first defense is pretty safe.
Yeah. So I just based on, listen, I'm going with a fan's heart here. I'm not really putting on my analytical cap. I think Chris Weidman is going to come back in the rematch and surprise you a little bit, Gumby. And based on that fact, because I'm Team Weidman, I joined the team, I'm going to say that Luke Rockhold will not be middleweight champion at the end of the year.
I didn't even consider Weidman, for the record.
Sad. Sad state of affairs. All right, and then moving up a division, you have the 205-pound champion, Daniel Cormier. Is he still champion come December?
No. Emphatic no to start. I'm not even going to give you time to think about that. John Jones, probably one of the best top three fighters of all time.
We said it earlier.
Which we said earlier.
And I agree.
And plus, I mean, we talked about before, too. We've all seen pictures of what he looks like now. Kid's a freak.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still young.
You lift, bro?
Yeah. I don't lift, bro. But he's a freak. He's huge. He looks like he's gotten stronger. And Cormier couldn't get him down when he was skinnier. So how could that rematch possibly go Cormier's way? I can't draw a path to victory for him.
Agreed. Can you talk to anyone real quick past Jones? Let's say he did get past Jones in a wild world. Bader?
I think Bader is a bad – or take that back. I think Cormier is a bad matchup for Bader. I think there are a lot of winnable fights in that division for Bader until you get to the top two. I think he could beat Gustafson. I think he could
– He just did.
Yeah, he did just beat Gustafson. I think he could beat him again. Teixeira,
Rashad,
Manoa, yeah. Rashad, all those people in the top, I think he's either beaten them or could beat him in a rematch. I think he's got the potential to beat all those people. You get to Jones and Cormier, and all of a sudden that KO hand is less likely to land because the other two are more elusive, and the wrestling has swung the other way. He's got a wrestling advantage over Gustafson. He's got a wrestling advantage over Manoa. He's got a wrestling advantage over Teixeira. wrestling advantage over Evans, wrestling advantage over Rampage. We can keep going on this, but he doesn't have it over Jones and Cormier, and I think that's where he maxes out. He maxes out at number three.
So I will agree with you on that, that Cormier is not going to keep the title just based on one man and one man only, that being Jon Jones. And then we move to our 10th and final champion, the baddest man on the planet, the heavyweight champion, Fabricio Werdum. Do you see him still being champion come December 31st?
I'm going to go probably unpopular decision here, too. I'm saying he loses it as well. The heavyweight division, historically very, very light, but there's two or three there right now that I think could beat Werdum. You got Velasquez, okay, and we're C-level Velasquez.
C-level Velasquez.
Yeah, obviously right now he's back on C-level. I'd like him in a rematch, okay, because, you know, he was getting tagged in the feet. Who knows if he gets this fight down earlier and doesn't stick his head in a weird spot. Might be completely different. He comes back from losses very well. When he fought JDS the second time, that's a whole new fighter right there. So he comes back from loss as well. On top of that, I think you got Stipe Miocic, who is a tough, tough out for Werdum as well. And the one that other people are trying to squeeze in there, as much as sometimes he's put in some pretty poor performances, Overeem has a win over Werdum.
The Ream. Yeah. So I agree with everything you just said. I do not think Werdum is going to be champion come December. And I say that not so much even based off Werdum. I think Verdum's great, but it's just that division. It's what we've already talked about. It's the heavyweight division. Anything can happen. And, you know, just for the purposes of this game, I could see someone picking him off. Why not? So when I look at it overall, we disagreed on four, Gumby. We disagreed on Holly Holm, Connor, RDA, and then, because I was picking with my heart, on Luke Rockhold. So, like I said, the non-existent intern will tally this, we'll keep it, and we'll visit it back again in December.
And you guys have the email address if you would like to be the existent intern.
Yes, someone please step up and write us in with what you think. Who do you think is going to still be champion out of the 10 come December 31st? So, Gumby, I think our time is short. You know, it was a good first podcast, maybe bumpy in certain parts, but they say you'll never forget your first time, and I think we can say that for our first podcast.
Yeah, I could say pretty sure that I will not forget my first podcast. So thank you, Dave, for finally putting this together for MMA Manifesto, and please make sure that you subscribe, listen, follow all of the different links that are going to be on this page. And make sure that you listen in next week, too, because we'll be right back at it next time.
And they say in MMA, when you get to Top Turtle, you should always be looking to finish. We are Top Turtle, and we are finished.